Looking for your next favorite podcast? Start here.
I was told that women belong barefoot and pregnant, and they would have to hire me, obviously, because of, you know, affirmative action back then, because there were no women, but that they would fire me in 6 months.
So you're sent into a foreign country and your assignment is overthrow the government. What do you do? Like, what do you do on the first day? 9 o'clock, you get to the office. How do you start?
I don't think there's a market for Scooter Gennett. I think if there were a market for him, they would have already traded him. And when you look at the free agent market, and none of these free agent second basemen are going anywhere or getting any kind of money, why would you spend big money on a guy that has been a really good hitter, but, you know, not defensively, not great, and who you have a long-term replacement already in camp?
Get set for samples from Bad With Money, Throughline, and Red Leg Nation Radio. Welcome to Start Here from Cincinnati Public Radio. I'm Trip Eldridge, your podcast jockey. Each week, we sample and highlight 3 podcasts to help you navigate the exploding podcast world and maybe even help you find your next podcast obsession. Plus, get an email summary of each podcast we feature with our weekly Start Here email blast. Just go to wvxu.org/subscribe and select the Start Here email blast at the bottom of the page. And if you like what you hear, please rate us at Apple Podcasts. A 5-star rating will help others find us in the iTunes gallery. Now, with special thanks to Cincinnati Public Radio's Wiser Advisors, Jim Nolan and Kevin Reynolds, and writing, research, and curation support from Connor Eldridge, let's start here. There are hundreds of finance podcasts that promise to help you spend less, save more, and live a life free of financial worry. And while they may work for some, they don't cut it for everyone, and they're usually pretty boring. So if you feel the same way, you might be a fan of Bad With Money. Join TV writer, actor, and New York Times bestselling author Gabby Dunn, a.k.a. America's Deadbeat Sweetheart, for season 4 of her hit podcast, Bad With Money. After 3 seasons of reckoning with her own financial identity, Gabby's ready to give the American financial system an identity crisis. Every week, Gabby brings a queer, feminist, unabashedly radical point of view to conversations with celebrities, journalists, politicians, authors, activists, and fellow deadbeats. If you're sick of the podcast experts giving you practical financial advice, you're going to love Bad With Money, the show that knows there's nothing practical about money and it isn't afraid to freak out about it. Check out this clip from season 4 teaser featuring legendary finance guru Susie Orman. Susie joins the show to talk about her history in the world of finance and what she's learned in a system designed to be confusing and cutthroat.
Susie is one of the largest financial gurus, if not the largest female financial guru out there. She is a queer woman like me. She has sold, millions, millions of books. This is just a snippet of the interview, and I hope it gets you excited for Bad With Money season 4. I cannot believe this happened. I'm freaking out.
Obviously, I'm somebody who made it out of the muck, right? Grew up on the south side of Chicago. Mom was a secretary. My dad was sick his entire life. Nobody ever expected me to be anything. A waitress till I was 30. And worked really, really hard now to become where I am. And yeah, I live on a private island. You're damn right I do.
Do you think like there is something to being more aggressive as a woman in the field? Is that something you're conscious of?
Oh, you know, it's hard for me because I've always been the first or only woman in this field. You know, in 1980, when I first became a stockbroker and I was hired in the Oakland office of Merrill Lynch, obviously, none of you were born in 1980, probably. There were no women stockbrokers at the time. I was the very first one in the Oakland office of 100 men. And I was told that women belong barefoot and pregnant, and they would have to hire me, obviously, because of, you know, affirmative action back then, because there were no women, but that they would fire me in 6 months. Now, obviously, it's no, you know, secret. I've been gay my entire life. And it was, you know, I always told everybody I was gay because I was quite proud that I was gay. I never thought I had to hide anything. But anyway, so now that other women stockbrokers are having to sleep with managers and other male stockbrokers, I walked into the sales manager's office and I said, if you ever approach me in a way that is disrespectful to me, I will cut your little pecker off.
And they didn't fire you?
No, because that earned their respect.
Why is it important for women to be in finance or to take control of financial stuff or be visible in that way?
Do you know today that financial abuse, which is my big thing that I'm now involved in, but there are women, mm-hmm. wealthy women, very poor women, all kinds of women, that 1 out of 4 women today suffer financial abuse. And if you are not strong with your money, whether you know it or not, you can come under the reins of somebody and suffer such financial abuse, it's not even funny. So if you want to go and be a woman and live your life not knowing anything about your money and everything, you are just plain stupid.
I think a lot of people are put off by, you know, being called stupid or like the aggressive nature of the financial industry in general.
Listen, I don't like the financial industry at all. Right? I think that if it's so easy, you have to understand that if somebody like me, who never got good grades through the world all, if you looked at me as a person who didn't come from money, didn't marry money, never really got good grades, anything above a C, I think, in college, that I've, you know, had the mm-hmm. lowest reading score in my class when I was in grammar school. Everybody thought I was stupid.
You know, I think a lot of the criticism lobbed at people like you is that the advice changes all the time.
You don't need some financial advisor, in my opinion, to tell you what to do with money. You're the one who's created that money. If you can't deal with your money, you can't deal with you.
You're very like, here's what you need to do. And I do some of that, but I also have a very like, okay, this is the systemic reason that this isn't really working out. And this is what you can do politically.
But why do you think one excludes the other?
No, I don't think they do. I think there is room. Like, I think there is a middle ground.
But there has to be. I mean, every single one of us, I don't care what age you are now, you have to get involved in that. Nothing's going to be there for us except you. So the truth of the matter is the younger generation needs to know more about their money and what to do with their money than any other generation prior to this, in my own opinion.
That's Bad with Money from Panel Please. Season 4 of Bad with Money is coming soon, so stay tuned on WVXU's Podcast Central and don't miss it. New to the Podcast Central collection this week is something we've been talking about from the Apple Podcast charts for a while. It's called Throughline. It's from NPR. Each week, Throughline traces the origins of today's headlines, exploring the tangled and confusing history that's led to this moment. How does the massive but little-remembered Korean War affect the region today? What can the history of protest by black athletes tell us about Colin Kaepernick and the NFL? With questions like these, Throughline examines how we can take the lessons of the past and turn them into the solutions of the future. The past is never past. Every headline has a history, and Throughline finds it. Let's give you a sample snippet from the first episode of Throughline titled, How the CIA Overthrew Iran's Democracy in 4 Days. The episode traces the tensions of U.S.-Iran relations back to a 4-day coup orchestrated by the CIA to oust recently elected Prime Minister Mohammad Mossadegh. In the clip, they explore how the leader of the coup, Kermit Roosevelt, went about overthrowing a foreign government.
But the first question Roosevelt had to answer...
I've asked myself this question.
...was how?
So, you're sent into a foreign country and your assignment is overthrow the government. What do you do? Like, what do you do on the first day? 9 o'clock, you get to the office. How do you start?
Even though the CIA had devised a plan for Roosevelt, no one was sure it would actually work. It was suddenly up to Roosevelt to destabilize a whole country.
Step one.
Seize control of the Iranian press.
Basically buy them off with bribes.
Turned out that the press was quite corrupt.
And soon enough, Roosevelt had columnists, editors, and reporters from most of Iran's newspapers on his payroll. Then, anti-Mossadegh propaganda began printing everywhere.
Mossadegh was a Jew, a homosexual, a British agent, anything that they thought would outrage people.
There was such an appetite for these stories that Iranian journalists just couldn't keep up. So Roosevelt had to recruit CIA agents back in Washington to write some of the articles for the Iranian press.
In fact, one of them later wrote a memoir, and he talked about how bizarre it was. At the CIA, you had the people plotting the Iran coup, and then you had analysts on the other side who weren't aware of the covert action. And he said, I would write an article about how Mossadegh was an atheist and he hated God. And then a couple of days later, a guy from the other side of the hall in the analysis division would run over to my office holding up an Iranian newspaper and saying, wow, you won't believe how the newspapers in Iran are denouncing Mossadegh. Look at this article. And I couldn't tell him. I wrote that article.
Step two, recruit allies on the ground. Most importantly, the Islamic clergy, or mullahs, who held a lot of power in Iran.
Kermit Roosevelt made strategic payments to a number of important mullahs in exchange for them delivering sermons denouncing Mossadegh from the pulpit as against God and irreligious.
Step three, get Iran's king, the Shah, on board.
And convince the Iranian Shah, Mohammad Reza Pahlavi, that Mossadegh was a threat.
This part took some persuading, though.
Yeah, because in theory, at least, the Shah and the prime minister were meant to work together.
But there was a lot of tension between them, because for decades, Iran's parliament and Shah had a tough time sharing power. It would be a big deal for the Shah to help overthrow the prime minister. But Roosevelt saw an opening to turn them against each other.
That included bribing the Shah's sister in exchange for her help convincing the Shah to sign on. And there are reports that a fur coat was even part of the deal. But that tactic failed.
Eventually, Roosevelt took matters into his own hands and began meeting with the Shah almost every day, at midnight, in a taxi cab, always in a different location. During these late-night meetings, Roosevelt managed to convince the Shah that Mossadegh was a threat, and so the Shah agreed to the coup.
And finally, step four, go to Mossadegh's house in the middle of the night, arrest him, and consolidate power in the hands of the Shah, who was more friendly towards the West than Mossadegh.
But remember, the coup attempt failed.
At this point, you're probably wondering why the U.S. went to all this trouble, sending Roosevelt to Iran, having him stir up chaos in the country, and ultimately trying to carry out a coup. Why were they so hell-bent on getting Mossadegh out of power?
Well, the truth is, the U.S. was dragged into the situation by Great Britain, all because of one thing.
A fifth of the world's oil supply was cut off, and nationalist feeling ran high against Britain and the Western democracy.
We sometimes say that countries are blessed with resources, but sometimes resources can be a curse, particularly if you're a country that's weak, because there are always strong countries that want to come and take what you have.
And Iran was cursed with a lot of oil. Oil was discovered there in 1908, and almost immediately, Great Britain took an interest. And at that time, Britain was the world's biggest superpower, so they decided to strike a deal with the Iranian Shah, and they needed a lot of oil.
This deal between the British and Iran was completely one-sided.
Great Britain was taking well over 80% of the revenues, while Iran was receiving about 10 to 12% of the revenues from its natural resource.
Wait. A deal like that makes no sense, though. Why did Iran agree to that?
Well, yeah, it makes no sense unless you're in desperate need of money. Hmm. And Iran's government in the early 20th century was desperate.
Iran, during the early part of the 20th century, was still ruled by the old Qajar royal dynasty. This was a very corrupt dynasty, and it supported itself by selling off anything of value in Iran.
They sold off the transportation industry, the tobacco industry, the caviar fisheries. They even sold off the country's treasury and banking industries. It was basically a free-for-all, and the British were first in line. Oil was by far their most valuable acquisition. And here's a fun fact. The company that controlled all of that oil was originally called the Anglo-Persian Oil Company, which would later become...
Every day, BP supplies the fuel and lubricants that start the engine...
Oh, British Petroleum.
A sample from the hit new podcast from NPR, Throughline. The first four episodes of Throughline are out now, so check them out on WVXU's Podcast Central. Baseball spring training is in full swing, and the Reds are looking forward to a banner year, fingers crossed. After a series of exciting off-season acquisitions, the team looks poised to make a good run at the pennant in the fall. There's only one place now to keep up with the latest news, the hottest prospects, and projections for the season, Red Leg Nation Radio. With the up-to-the-minute info on players, spring games, trades, and more, the Red Leg Nation radio podcast will keep you ready and excited for opening day. The Reds have a long season ahead of them, and you can catch every minute with the help of Red Leg Nation Radio. Check out the sample from a recent episode of the show featuring Chad Dotson and Reds superfan Bill Lack. Bill joins the show to talk about the status of Reds star infielder Scooter Gennett, as well as other recent team news. In this clip, the guys give their take on why Scooter still hasn't been offered a contract extension.
There are a few things, though, that I think are playing into this. And the first of those is that I think they haven't been able to trade him, and I don't think they're eager to sign him to a long-term deal because I don't think there's a market for Scooter Gennett. I think if there were a market for him, they would have already traded him. And when you look at the free agent market, and none of these free agent second basemen are going anywhere or getting any kind of money, why would you spend big money on a guy that has been a really good hitter, but not defensively, not great, and who you have a long-term replacement already in camp, in Nick Senzel potentially. So the way I look at it is if the Reds sign him to some kind of a reasonable long-term contract, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, I'm fine with that. He has been a good hitter. You can't argue with the production at the plate. But to me, whether they sign him or not, the Reds have absolutely 100% of the leverage here, to me.
And have handled the situation, I think, perfectly.
I do, too.
Let me ask you a question now. Let's say they either flip Gennett at the All-Star break or, at the deadline, or don't sign him and let him walk at the end of the year. And Senzel's played center field all year. What do you move Senzel into the infield or do you leave him in center field?
Well, that's going to be somewhat dependent on how well he plays in center field defensively, Senzel. But I think all things, being equal, I probably move him to second base if there's an opening because all the scouting reports are that he has the opportunity to be a Gold Glove second baseman. And there's
just value in how it plays out.
Yeah, there's lots of options there, and the Reds have done the right thing. And Scooter, the reason why it's in the news this week, we should mention, is that Scooter he's a little frustrated by the fact that the Reds haven't he's told them he's available to sign, and they're not. The Reds haven't been too interested. It seems like we've definitely opened it up. Jeanette said they know I want to play here. They know I enjoy playing on this team. I enjoy the coaching staff. I enjoy my teammates. They know all that. There's nothing else to tell them at this point. It's waiting for them to come back, which they have not. We've heard absolutely nothing. Zero. Wow. He sounds irritated, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. And I'm not going to say that I don't understand his position because the Reds front office, someone in the Reds organization.
It was ownership. We saw it last year. He specifically mentioned that he's had conversations with Bob Castellini. Scooter said that.
So it sounds like communication has broken down, and that's never a good thing, though.
I agree. That's not a good thing. They need to be communicating with him what their plans are to the extent that they can. But I do think it's encouraging that the Reds front office is pumping the brakes a little bit on the Scooter talks that, clearly he wants to sign, and Castellini at some point wanted him signed. Although if Castellini decides he wants him signed, he'll get him signed. But and I think the Reds front office is right not to have signed him at this point, in my opinion, although I think you can make the argument either way. But the flip side of that is if I'm Scooter Gennett, I'm probably pretty frustrated right now too because I'm a guy that's hit very, very well for 2 straight years here. I've become an all-star for this team. I've become in some ways the face of the franchise. I made it into Chapter 39 of the Big 50, the men and moments that made the Cincinnati
that
Reds.
That makes you a star right there.
Exactly. And no offer at all. Zero, he said. We've heard absolutely nothing. I think I would be frustrated if I were him too, because what else do I need to do? Is the way I would feel. But so I think that both sides are kind of reasonable in their where they are right now. Does that make any sense at all to you?
No, I agree with you. And part of it is, he happens to be he's in a position where there's not a lot of demand, so the team can kind of ignore him.
Yeah, and he becomes replaceable by the fact that two things: he doesn't play defense very well, and the Reds have Nick Senzel. If the Reds didn't have Nick Senzel right now, ready to go, Scooter Gennett might be, You know, especially now they've traded Shed Long, you know, Scooter might have more value to this organization.
Our local podcast spotlight, Red Leg Nation Radio Podcast with Chad Dotson. Stay up to date on your hometown team with Red Leg Nation Radio. Available now on WVXU's Podcast Central. Before we wrap up today, let's take our weekly look at what's hot around the podcast nation for the Apple Podcast Charts via iTunescharts.net. Along with last week's number one, Over My Dead Body, which we will be featuring on next week's Start Here episode, is a new news podcast from the media company called The Skim. It's a nonpartisan news source that just launched a daily podcast that drops for your commute home each weekday. It's not the usual news read, though. Instead, Skim This will focus on around four stories in total over the course of about 10 minutes and provide more context and clarity around the main story to help you understand why it's important. That's Skim This, number one on the Apple Podcast Charts. Thank you for joining us for Start Here, Cincinnati Public Radio's Discovery Podcast. For more information about podcasts we like, check out Podcast Central at WVXU.org. And remember, if you've got a podcast or an episode you'd like to recommend, email us at podcast at WVXU.org or call us at 513-294-8030 and we'll add your voice to ours. For now, I'm Trip Eldridge for Cincinnati Public Radio, and thank you for choosing to start here.